Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Back to Basics, which we are recording during the break between Christmas and New Year, which means that, as you know, if any of you know us, know we've wasted way more of our recording time doing random BS and not nearly enough time actually recording episodes. So here we are, ready to talk about
almost
the Bible.
Like we're friends, almost like we're very close friends that want to catch up once in a while,
right?
And life is busy.
For those of you who don't know, again, episode 64, I think we're at now. Interesting place to join, but hey, I'm happy to have you anyway. I am Pastor Don. I'm joined by the lovely, the wonderful, the magnificent, the list your descriptor here, Courtney Fraley. Ta-da!
Hello.
So today, we are going to be tear-assing through Genesis chapter 43. Somewhat of a long one.
Tear-assing.
Yeah,
that's the, again, if for the random new people who are somehow watching this video first, kudos, but yeah, that's the kind of show this is.
Oh yeah, we definitely swear. There's a lot to swear about in some of this shit, so deal with it.
It's Bible.
So we are coming off of, and I say this to give you a background from the previous episode, and just as well to give myself a background, because we haven't recorded in a little while because Christmas happened to all of us. And whew, let me tell you, Christmas happened. So we did,
and so did cold and flu season.
Our last two episodes were from Genesis 42, where Joseph's brothers went to Egypt, encountered Joseph, and were basically told to fuck off on home. And then they went back to Canaan and they told dear old dad, hey, we're home and we didn't bring any, we brought grain and we also brought all of our silver back. Oh shit, we're in trouble. Also, he wants your youngest child. So yeah. And then Jacob, the father, got really kind of pissed about that, because he didn't want to let go of his youngest child, which, by the way, side note, the youngest child, Benjamin, is Joseph's only full brother in this story. Everyone else is a half brother. And so I talked about this in a different podcast I recorded earlier this week. But, what?
I should follow like your other online stuff. I don't have time. I'm a mom.
I know. None of us have time.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah. This is why I try to appear on as many podcasts as possible. I'm getting this stuff out there. Anyway. Yeah. No. Benjamin is actually one of Jacob's two sons with Rachel. And that's Benjamin and Joseph. Okay. So, fun fact that, and this is what we discussed on that other podcast, a lot of the favoritism that Jacob had for Joseph and now is showing for Benjamin may have less to do with the boys themselves and more to do with his relationship with Rachel. Who I believe at this point
had,
is dead.
The kids he had with Rachel specifically. Yeah. Like, that's so, gonna
so at the end of more. End of chapter 42, everybody's back with Jacob and they say, well, we got to bring back Benjamin or he's going to be fucking pissed. And Jacob says, absolutely not. At which point, was it Reuben, I think, that did this? Yeah, Reuben says, oh, hey, if you're worried about losing your sons, you can kill a couple of mine in case that makes you feel better. And literally everyone's like, Reuben, you're not fucking helping. And that's pretty much where the passage ended, with Reuben doing a dumb shit. And they're trying to figure out how to handle this whole Joseph wants Benjamin brought back situation. And that gets us to the beginning of Genesis chapter 43. Now, which one of us should read today? Would you like me to do it or do you want to?
I've been enjoying reading aloud to my daughter, so let's go ahead and do that. Yeah.
All right. Take it away.
Okay. The header says, "The brothers come again, bringing Benjamin." Now the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten up the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again, buy us a little more food." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" Israel said, "Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man you had another brother?" They replied, "The man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?' What we told him was an answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down'?" Then Judah said to his father Israel, "Send the boy with me. and let us be on our way so that we may live and not die, you and we and also our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You can hold me accountable for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Let me get it just here. If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry them down as a present to the man. A little balm and a little honey, gum, resin, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the top of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take your brother also, and be on your way again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, so he may send back your other brother and Benjamin. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So the men took the present, and they took double the money with them, as well as Benjamin. Then they went on their way down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. The man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money replaced in our sacks the first time that we have been brought in, so he may have an opportunity to fall upon us, to make slaves of us and take our donkeys. So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke with him at the entrance to the house. They said, oh, my lord, we came down for the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each one's money in the top of his sack, our money in full weight. So we've brought it back with us. Moreover, we have brought down with us additional money to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks. He replied, rest assured, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father must have put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. When the steward had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they had heard that they would dine there. When Joseph came home, they brought him the present they had carried into the house and bowed to the ground before him. He inquired about their welfare and said, is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and did obeisance. Then he looked up and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. With that, Joseph hurried out because he was overcome with affection for his brother and he was about to weep. So he went to a private room and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he said, serve the meal. They served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. When they were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth, the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him.
All right. So this is this chapter here.
Apologies, but my immediate first reaction, reading this aloud immediately after reading like classic fairy tales aloud to my daughter, really fun. So I don't remember this story at all.
Yeah,
well, and I'm trying to follow it as I'm reading it myself and inflect correctly. It's fun.
This passage is kind of like the smooth kind of plains section before we get back into the mountains of the story. The story of Joseph is got a lot of ups and downs to it. And what's happening here, this is the setup, is what's happening here, or at least the next stage of the setup. Now, one point that I'm gonna bring up here is that Joseph is clearly fucking with him. Like, he is.
From the get-go, he's been fucking with him.
From the get-go, and he's not just doing this, It's a ha-ha, gotcha. Like, he is really leveling up the fuckery as he goes on. And the chapter 43 is pretty much just that. Now,
between this behavior and the fancy coat, like, can we agree that Joseph is a little bit gay-coded?
Yes, actually, that's like this. There are multiple interpretations to this passage, and one of the more common ones is the queer coding of Joseph. Like, that some of his abuse may be rooted in that. Like, that is, I mean, of course, and I can't.
I need to do more Bible study. This shit is fun.
Great, isn't it? I can't stress this enough. It is not explicit in the text, so we cannot say definitively. However, particularly with some of the language pieces that are used here, there are feminine pieces of languages that are used around Joseph that are not often used except in other instances of queer coding in the Bible. Like, we get it with David and Jonathan, some of the same.
He's described as beautiful, isn't he? Yes. Similar to how David is?
In the exact same way. The same way that David describes Jonathan.
Yay! I've been following this whole story!
Yeah, like, shit. A lot of this phraseology is similar to instances where we have what we would modern, and I got to stress this, what we would modernly call queer coding in the Bible. And this is a very important piece of information to hold, is that the dynamics of sexual relations and sexual preference in those days were not the same as they are now. So even reading terms like lesbian, gay, bisexual, or even transgender into this text is eisegetical, because like the conceptualization of,
we're using words that were created for the structure that we function in. Correct. The structure we function in is different from the structure they functioned in. So the terminology is so different as to be meaningless to attempt to translate.
To be clear, like, at the time, the
without idea a ridiculous amount, unless you have like the Alter translation with a whole full even explanation that of what even everything that is.
Like, saying sexual preference in those times would be akin to saying like economic preference in these times. Like, okay, that's a kind of a weird thing to have a preference with. Like, sex is a tool for economics in those days. Like, who you married and who you had sex with had to do with how you made your way in the world economically and familially, and didn't really much have to do with like where you wanted to stick your dick and or other parts. Like, it, like those pieces, like, they still existed. They were still humans. But they were very much secondary to the social and economic aspects of it, which were by far and away the way it was understood. So we can talk about queer coding Joseph as much as we want, because like the way he's presented definitely
but that is that's an actual academic take.
Yeah, absolutely.
is that it's queer coding him. The behavior too, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a good thing, but it is a long standing gay stereotype of being sort of, you know, manipulative.
And
that's like negative coding is still coding.
Yeah, and let's be clear here. Like,
can we just do a whole series on gay coding in the Bible, please? Eventually, like, that would be fun.
I want to establish this separation here too. By the way, the queer coding of Joseph here. Isn't the negative pieces aren't part of the queer coding. The way he's expressed, the way he's described, the way his mannerisms are presented are kind of the queer coding aspects of it. But like him being a saucy little bitch who likes to manipulate, that was not part of the queer coding. That's just Joseph. Like, we could read that modernly with our modern sets of...
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, like our modern prejudices
in the you can't make this up category.
Yeah. Like, our modern prejudices might see that as part of the queer coding, but linguistically and structurally and scripturally, it's not. Like, that's just Joseph being an ass. But I do want to stress this too, because so much of what we're seeing with Joseph here, like his fixation on Benjamin, like a lot of these are trauma responses. Keep in mind that when Joseph was sold into slavery, Benjamin was quite likely an infant or a toddler. So he may not have had much of a
relationship. He would have had no agency in the situation. No.
He would have had no agency. Benjamin wouldn't have had agency, but also Benjamin wouldn't have had much of a relationship with Joseph, and vice versa. So Joseph's kind of obsessing over Benjamin here as the other son of his mother, and seems to have built up kind of a relationship in his head, but that seems to be as much an expression of trauma as any real extant relationship. And so a lot of what Joseph's doing here is manipulative and bitchy as fuck, but it's not tactical in that way. It's trauma expressions. A lot of it is trauma expressions. Now, take those expressions of interpersonal trauma.
Today on Therapy in the Bible.
Right? But now here's the thing. Take that interpersonal trauma and then build it up for years of repression and then cram it into a guy who has all the power of the law on his side. And you basically have Joseph, the abusive cop. I mean, that's what this is.
Are you going to do this to every, like, major biblical figure that's, like, venerated? Are you seriously going to be like, oh, guess what? This one's problematic, too, and it's part of the point.
Yes, exactly. It's part of the point. And, you know, I mentioned I talked about this in a podcast.
You're the one who's a sassy bitch.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned this in I mentioned earlier a podcast that I do that I guest host on. It's called The Word in Black and Red. You ever want to look it up? It's a great one to listen to, especially the ones with me on because I'm awesome. But we talked about this in one that we just recently recorded where we were looking at this sequence of stories. And, you know, again, I want to be very clear that my position vis-a-vis law enforcement definitely starts with the word fuck and ends with the police. And I believe that to be a scripturally supported position. Having said that, it's worth noting that in as much as
who
Joseph
came and got Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane,
you know,
what was he doing? Praying, look, not hurting anybody.
I live and operate in ministry in the service of a black man who was killed by the cops. I am definitely going to hold that position. That being said, though, like there is something learnable here from this situation, because as I mentioned, Joseph's developing trauma and the way it's expressing through abuses of authority is very American policing. But there's a line here, like where he's not a monster. His actions are not correct. They are not kind, and they are not, dare we say, Christian. I mean, obviously, Christ, so that's an irrelevant distinction, but you know, he's understandable, and this is something that we can apply modernly. Like, yeah, I'm gonna get up here and say with all the full authority of the Lord Jesus Christ, fuck the police, but like that's not to say they're not understandable. Like the trauma leading to an abusive authority.
If I might offer an attempt at a summation, there's a difference between all cops are bastards mm-hmm. and all cops are monsters.
Yes. And that's exactly.
Cops are monsters.
Welcome.
Even if you are the epitome of the person who is trying to change the system for the better and gives a damn about justice and the kind of things that if you were raised to respect cops, you envision mm-hmm. in your heart when you think about like a police officer, like a good cop, which is honest to God, folks who aren't white, that is a thing. That is what you can genuinely grow up believing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not all monsters, but even if that's like you're trying to fight that and make it better, that requires like a good sort of bastardliness, you know.
my word of caution here was to understand that like Joseph is a bastard here. Absolutely. And I did mean to draw the fact that just because he's a bastard doesn't mean we don't understand where he's coming from. It doesn't mean we don't understand the trauma he's operating on and the real hurt that he's acting in response to. Everybody has those things. And what we have here is an example of him reacting to that hurt in ways that are destructive and negative. And by the way, lest you think that this resolves properly at the end, I'll give you a little bit of spoilers for how this story plays out. Like, Joseph does eventually reveal himself to his brothers and to his father. And, you know, as we were taught in Sunday school, hooray, everybody's reconciled and everything comes back together. And the father and the brothers come into Egypt and live under the loving.
Of years later, 2,000 years later, it's a musical.
Well, no, follow me on this. So Joseph and his brothers are reconciled and Jacob comes back in. The whole family comes reunited under the new and prosperous Joseph, just as the dream predicted. Where are they reuniting? They are reuniting as Hebrews living in Egypt. We're a couple of chapters away from the next book, which is what now?
Exodus.
Right. This does not point in a positive direction.
God, the Old Testament is so long. Sorry, I'm just having one of those moments where I'm like, oh,
we can have
my
this for a minute.
God.
We have
like,
to
I grew
have this
up,
for a minute.
Like, again, this is one of my, this is your occasional reminder that Courtney grew up, like, in the church. Like, I went to an actual brick and mortar church recently. Shout out to the Episcopal Church in Manistee. Maybe we can put a link in the comments or something. But I sit down and I'm like, ooh, a Book of Common Prayer. And like, this has been, I haven't been in an actual brick and mortar church in years. Like, okay, like, I don't know if this is a secret time or whatever, but like, your consistory head here, like, has had a long time where I was very, very iffy on the placement of my faith and like what I genuinely believed in and such.
We've all been there.
But like, I go back and I'm just, oh, here's all the same shit that I'm sorry. You take back over.
No, that's
you know, all the same shit that I somehow remembered, like the same way that I remember song lyrics I haven't heard in, you know, 20 years.
And this is the thing, like, these arcs, like, we remember the story of Joseph from back in the day. We have, those of us who went to Sunday school, at least, like, we remember this being some big reconciliatory thing. But what we don't see is the dark cloud over the whole thing. Like, we see it when we're taught this story in Sunday school. We're taught this as like Joseph's kind of playing a fun game with his brothers, but in the end, it's all going to be all right. But like, there are multiple layers to which this story doesn't work out all right. What Joseph's doing is a violent abuse of power, a great deal of power that's been entrusted to him in Egypt. And when he surrenders that and reconciles and makes things right, the end result of this whole situation, from the fuck-ups of his brothers and selling him into slavery to Joseph's fuckings up here, the end result of this is the Hebrew people in Egypt, which is about the worst damn place for them to be. Because this is a situation that's now only going to be resolved with a multitude of plagues and 40 years in the desert and then a whole bunch of dead Canaanites. And then it goes on and on and on.
Oh, I can't believe it. Now I'm thinking back on earlier stuff. Earlier stuff from Genesis with God's people interacting with Egypt and all the fuckery, the unnecessary manipulative bullshit. Guess what? It's not nice to burn bridges. You're going to have to deal with these people again eventually.
And did you notice, by the way, in today's chapter down in verse 32, they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. Boy, the Egyptians don't think well of the Hebrews. Wonder where that comes from.
Perhaps their only experience with them was some crazy-ass manipulative, like, grabby bullshit.
And this is... like, this is why, as much of a damn slog as it's been, it's really kind of important to take some time once in a while and go through the Bible line by line, because, like, this isn't just shit that happened out of the blue. The Egyptians...
fascinating, too. Like,
the Hebrews didn't just happen to be slaves in Egypt. The Egyptians didn't suddenly look at these one group of people and say, oh, well, fuck these guys specifically. Like, this all built up over time. Like, there were interactions that led to this. This is a story with narrative intent. Like,
if you're just familiar with the Joseph story, this sort of kind of hits out of nowhere, but like, and you just kind of are like, oh wow, the Egyptians were bad or whatever. Like, no, they were just another people, and their history of interactions with the Hebrews were not great.
Well, they were not. And then,
which is not, and which just because I want to take a moment because of the everything around the world right now. Like, I want to make it abundantly clear, like, this is not an indictment of any one group of people. I'm calling out, like, anti-Semitism shit right now because, like, there's a lot of it going on. This is not any one group of people. This is everyone. Like, I think if I've learned anything from us, like, going over Genesis with a fine-tooth comb for the last, what, two and a half years now, It's that the whole point is, here's what God asked, here's what people did.
Mm-hmm.
How well did it match up? You know,
and like,
does God still get part of his will out of people who do, you know, fucked up things? Yeah. Like,
watch this theme as we go in a couple episodes from now, as we're going to start kicking it into Exodus. Because as we get kind of post Exodus and people,
I can't believe we're about to finish our first book.
Right. But like, as we get past the Exodus and stuff like that, and we start getting into the Book of Terror, Leviticus, which I know everybody's afraid of, as we start getting in that direction, we're going to start seeing the rise of Hebrew kings and stuff like that. And this is another good example. Like, God very early on says, don't have kings. You don't want kings. Don't do kings. They do kings. And then so God says, fine, if you're going to have kings, if you're going to have kings, fine, here's what you don't do. And then there's one king in the history of all of the line of kings up through the end of the United Kingdom of Israel. There's one king who just goes down that like a goddamn checklist of things that God said not to do and does them. And you know who that is? King Solomon, the one that we keep calling the wise. Like the themes that are
this,
much...
this one I picked up in my church upbringing. Solomon, amazing, gifted, dumb, deceitful, selfish. Like
this was a guy who was so wealthy he impoverished the entire region around him, so horny that he managed to plant an entire different version of Christianity in Ethiopia before Christ. Like, there's so many stories connected to how weird Solomon was that by the time we get there, we're going to be talking forever. But for now, this is where, the story of Joseph, the reason why the Joseph story is where Genesis ends, is because this is the epic foreshadowing that really leads us into Exodus. Everything that's in Genesis is coming to a head with the story of Joseph, and it ends with them planted in Egypt, ready for shit to get real. And the reason why they're there is, okay, well, God guided them there, certainly, but God guided them there along a rapid fire sequence of everybody's fuck ups. Like, God had a better plan in mind. And in the end, God's plan gets fulfilled. It just takes longer and is a longer and longer road the more we fuck it up.
And all of a sudden there's a more profound and less like satanic panic reason to align the concept of a DM with God, a dungeon master with you God. Know, here's this beautiful campaign I've laid out for you, but you're free to do whatever you want. Really, you are. So go and, you know, I'm going to make some clear signs about what I want you to do. Oh, I'm going to write it on the freaking wall sometimes. But look, you get I'm to do what be, you want to do.
I'm going to be clear. The goal of this campaign is to get you from your starting place here in the desert all the way to that manger on the other end. However, if you want to spend the next 60 years trying to sell your wife to the barkeep in the first tavern, that's fine. But don't be surprised when the tavern barkeep turns into a warlord and tries to kill you. And yes, that was a sly reference to Abraham.
These awesome side quests I had laid out for you.
As a complete side note, I'm just going to say for those of you who follow Lower Decks, like, basically most of Genesis is the people of God going after Katiha. Like, that's exactly what's happening here. So if you don't know your Lower Decks, go watch it. It's fucking hilarious. I made a great joke and I'm the best. If you have seen Lower Decks, then you know that. Anyway, right, last question.
Quick. Yes. Okay. Interjection. Can we pause? I need to go to the bathroom and I need water.
I was just going to close it up here.
Okay. Well, then can you edit that out?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Any last questions before we close it out?
No. I think we're good.
Well, our next episode, which will be recorded whenever it gets recorded, we're going to deal with the detention of Benjamin and the pleading for Benjamin's release and the continued manipulations and machinations of Joseph the saucy bitch. In the meantime, I'm going to let you all go for now. Yes?
And like, share, and subscribe.
Thank you, Courtney. You got to it before I could even cue you on it. Well done. Well done. Beautifully done. Beautifully done. Yes,
I'm
please.
Taking agency in my life.
I love it. I love to see a strong woman demonstrating agency. Best thing in the world. So Again, we will have our next episode to you. We're getting into the kind of the post-Christmas recovery of schedule. So
we're both parents. Yeah. The cold and flu season this year is
Give us grace.
What would Jesus do?
But I will say this, we're working on the scheduling right now, but once we finish Genesis, we are looking at having a really big live streamed, live back to basics episode for Exodus 1. And we're going to bring out a bunch of guest hosts, and it's going to be a wild ride. Stay tuned for that.
Exodus party. What the fuck are you talking about?
I can guarantee you that 80% of that live episode is going to be in altered states of mind. It is how it is.
This is your provisional elder speaking. Substances aren't inherently evil. God has given us a ridiculous number of things. It's a matter of using things safely and responsibly. So, by all means, if you are so inclined, do not feel guilty for a little bit of good times.
In all things, God works for good. And much like Will Riker, God is a consent fetishist. So as long as that's covered, we're good. Anyway, like a broken Courtney. So on that note, I'm going to leave you guys for this week. We will catch up with you on the next episode of Back to Basics, assuming Courtney survives. And if she doesn't, we will mourn her loss.
Water.
If she doesn't survive, we'll mourn her loss and get a new guest host. But hopefully we won't have to. Have a great week, and we'll see you all on the next episode. God knows when we'll record it. Bye.
Comment, send someone the video. Bye.